The Human Services and Rural Health Policy Committee, and welcome on this beautiful morning. Katie, did you have a nice trip this morning? I'm glad you're here. Okay, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2135A. You want to tell us about the bill here to refresh our memory?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2135A was originally heard April 29th. It requires rental agreements to indicate whether smoking is prohibited on the rental property, allowed or allowed only in specific areas on the property. It exempts owner-occupied mobile homes and houseboats from the rental agreement requirement, and it specifies requirement be included in the rental agreement and smoke detection statutes.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move House Bill 2135A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2135A to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Any questions or concerns from our hearing? Okay, seeing none. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Monson.
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay, House Bill 2135A passes through the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Anyone want to carry the bill?
Sure.
Senator Montes Anderson will carry the bill.
Since I'm a landlord.
Yes, indeed, you're a landlord. Okay.
And I post those signs in there?
You have a rental agreement. Okay. We will open the public, we'll open the work session on House Bill 2138A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2138A again was heard on April 29th. It updates the language and definitions related to continuing care retirement communities, provides for increased disclosure of operating expenses, including fees, financial status, and Medicare and Medicaid provider status, provides for the rights of residents in a continuing care community, including establishment of a resident council and a resident representative to the community governing board. It eliminates eliminates entrance fees from the definition of open bed long-term care facility and eliminates the requirement that changes to residential disclosure statements be disclosed to DHS prior to release to residents. Requires providers amending an annual disclosure statement file all new materials with DHS.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move House Bill 2138A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2138A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Okay, seeing no discussion, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Montes.
Aye.
Senator Berger.
Aye.
Senator Tucker.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Cruz. Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2138A will go to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any volunteers? Okay, I will carry the bill. Okay, we will open a work session on 2581A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2581A transfers administration of the Rural Health Services Program from the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to the Office of Rural Health. It redefines qualifying practice site to reference the Federal Rural Health Clinics Acts of 1977. This measure was originally heard April 29th, to which it was suggested an amendment be provided to add an emergency clause into the measure. That's been done. That would be the A2 amendment.
Okay.
And we've received a no revenue impact statement and a fiscal statement issue.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
According to the summary, the effect of the committee amendment, that's not the amendment that we have before us, correct? The A2s?
It is the amendment.
Because it just says it adds an emergency clause into the measure, and then when I look at the bill, it deletes everything and is a gut and stuff.
It's, Senator Ronna Sanderson, the emergency clause is added in Section 13. That the remaining... That's the only...
Okay, so all the others
are...
They're
the same.
Okay.
It just adds it right at the end of the amendment measure.
But it deletes the section on transfer on the A and gross and deletes the Section 2. Is that right? Am I just not reading that right? On page 1, you put that, declare an emergency, and then you delete. No, I guess it all stays in. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2581.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves the dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2581A. Discussion? Opposition? Seeing none. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, they rescinded the subsequent referral in the House. Mm-hmm. This is basically just a transfer of funds. Would it be your pleasure that we have that in our motion as well?
I think it should go to Ways and Means. We're talking about other funds.
Just transfer.
There's budgetary action required.
Well, it didn't go to Ways. It was. It didn't go to Ways and Means from the House, and I don't see any reason to send it to Ways and Means. It is a transfer.
Transfer in, transfer out.
Mm-hmm. So what if Ways and Means doesn't want to transfer?
Ways and Means has enough to do, I think, that we can move it to the floor.
I mean, I guess I'm they rescinded it on the House side.
Yeah.
And, I'm assuming they had probably the same fiscal because we didn't change
it. It shows.
It's
right.
The same.
And so that was their decision over there because it is just a fund transfer.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that we have revenues that, and then in the 2011-13, we don't have revenues, and hopefully there's going to be some revenues, or I just don't understand enough about this to know if it can be sustainable without the revenues that they ordinarily get. It's just, you know, something that revenue deals
with.
Do
we have Doug Barber come up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, I'm Doug Barber here on behalf of the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians and the Oregon Rural Health Association. I believe the transfer of funds is the money that's in the account that has already been promised or allocated for medical professionals who have graduated, have loans, are situated in rural communities, and the payout of the reimbursement on those loans is over a 4 or 5 year period. So that's why that money is sequestered and then paid out. The funding for the program historically has been $400,000 per biennium, and although we had a bill in on the House side to increase that funding that did not move, but our expectation is that the $400,000, which is in the governor's recommended budget, hopefully, budgets permitting, will continue in the biennium ahead. And so there will be funding for another round of awards.
Well, I guess I need explanation of the fiscal, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Is that? Because when you, I don't know if you have a copy of the fiscal.
I do not.
Would it be possible to give him a copy of the fiscal?
Yeah.
So I can, because we've done this with other things too. It looks, in 2009-11, evidently there's a revenue of over $1 million, and then in the 2011-13. There's no revenue, yet we still have the same expenditure of over $1 million. And so that's the question I have, is why is it zero in 2011-13? So we wouldn't have money to cover the expenditures in 2011-13. That's the only thing I would like to have answered. I know it's not in the next biennium.
What we can do is we'll just close the public hearing, we can get the answers and come back.
That's fine. I believe that is the $1 million that's already been promised. It carries forward, and it would just be a continuing rolling forward of whatever component of that was left. I don't know why it shows zero under 2011-13 for...
That's the only question I have.
For revenues.
Okay. We're going to, rather than take it to the floor and find out that we should have sent it to Ways and Means, I'm going to close the work session, and we will come back to this bill. We'll get some answers and come back.
Bill?
Yes.
Well, if we get a call down and see if we can get this to come up and explain it.
We can do that.
Kim Toe, she's the one who prepared it.
We'll see if we can get some information from...
Because we'll have time this morning.
Yeah, we'll have time, so we can...
So we're temporarily closing.
Yeah, okay. We may reopen the public or the work session. If we can do this expeditiously.
The policy decision to transfer the program, and then the money just goes with the program allocation.
Okay, public hearing. 22
will explain that.
Okay.
There's no point. We don't need to send it. There's two ways to meet. There's no point.
No.
I think you folks have enough work, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, we will stand at ease.
I think we'll get an explanation.
Yeah.
But if we have what the zeros don't make any sense.
Otherwise, it'll carry over.
I would agree with that. So,
okay, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2240. Dave McTeague. Morning, David.
Good morning.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2240 adds chiropractic physicians and the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners to insurance provisions relating to notice of professional negligence claims to health professional regulatory boards and to subsequent actions of the boards.
Okay, Dave, would you like
Thank
to
you, Mr.
introduce
Chair,
yourself, please?
Members of the committee, my name is Dave McTeague, Executive Director, Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Our office is here in South Salem. This bill's a bit of a housekeeping bill in that chiropractors appear to have been left out of the malpractice reporting statute, and we just want to be in the statute and offer the same public protections and the same public disclosure as other health professional boards like the medical board, nursing board, dentists, even naturopaths, I believe, are included in this as well. We'd operate under the same reporting provisions as the other boards, and that's basically all this bill does. And we'll get a few more reports, malpractice reports, I expect, than we receive right now, and there's some insurance companies that don't report to us at all. The major one does send us a notice of claims, but we don't hear from the other three chiropractic malpractice companies, and we'd like to hear from them as well. We'll find out in the future what this gives us in terms of information, but it'll be information we don't have now and potentially some public information that's valuable to consumers.
I don't see anything in this bill that makes you chiropractors.
Say again?
I don't see anything in the bill about any willing provider.
Not yet.
No, not yet.
Mr. Chair?
Simple
yes.
bill.
So why do you want this information? Just explain the reasoning.
Well, for one thing, I think it's a matter of equity. We want to offer the same public disclosure and public protection as the medical board and the dentistry board and every other board. And so that's the first part of it. And secondly, we might get information about a claim that leads us to think we should ask some questions. If, say, for example, a malpractice carrier closes a claim and says they pay out $50,000 to something, even though maybe the doctor didn't admit liability or something like that, and let's say it was on sexual harassment, well, we might be interested in asking a few questions about, did that involve a patient? Did that involve a staff person who was also a patient? So it's information that would assist us potentially in our public protection responsibilities.
So, Mr. Chair, yeah. So does that mean it would bring more clients to chiropractors? You'd have a better way of...
I hadn't looked at it from that point of view. I look at it from the point of view as the regulatory board, and this is information that may potentially be of interest to the board and would be of interest to the consumers who want to know if somebody had an action that should be reported on our website.
Okay, so this is to the board.
Right, right.
To the board, okay. Right.
We want the information to come to the Board of Chiropractic.
Gotcha.
Other questions?
I have a question.
Yes, Senator Richard.
We had a very high-profile case of a chiropractor who was actually, I don't know if he was found guilty, but he certainly resigned from his profession in my hometown in Coos Bay. Would you have not gotten that information if it were a malpractice suit involved a patient? The board would not have been notified of that at this point, before this bill.
It depends. The major malpractice carrier does send us a report of a claim that's been closed with it's not a lot of information. It says this doctor had a claim and they paid $15,000. The doctor didn't admit liability. Under this bill, that wouldn't be reported on the website. So a different chiropractic malpractice carrier might not have sent us anything. Was under no obligation to send us a report.
I see.
Well, now I'm curious about what was that case, because it doesn't ring a bell, and
right.
I would know
generally. Right.
I'm kind of, what time period did that occur?
Probably about, I would say, 6 years ago. About 6 years ago.
Now, are all of the chiropractors united into a...
Yes, they are.
Okay, because there was a...
Weirdly enough.
Thank God.
We're very happy about that.
You got tired of the war?
It's a good thing for the profession.
Well, you know, Mr. Chair, I'm saying six. I'm trying to think. Time flies when you're having fun, and since I'm trying to kind of pin it down, because I was in the legislature at the time, and it might have been 10 years ago, but it was a very highly visible front page story and malpractice suit of a local doctor there. Mm. And
Now, Dave, how long have you had the position?
I've been the director for 13 years.
13 years, so, okay.
I'm one of the old-timers now.
Yeah. Okay, other questions, comments? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Others wishing to testify? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing and open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2240 to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2240 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Comments? Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Montanerson?
Aye.
Senator
Merkin?
Aye.
Senator Telfair?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Morrison?
Aye. Any volunteers?
I think you should carry
the bill. I will carry the bill. Thank you. I love craft practice.
I know you do.
Okay, we will reopen a work session on House Bill 2581. Kim, would you come up, please?
Which one is it now again?
2581.
Which one? The Rural Health.
Cheers, Rural.
Doug, would you like to come up also in case you need to respond or ask questions or whatever? Kim, would you introduce yourself, please?
All right. Chair Morissette, what the fiscal shows is that...
No, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Oh.
Please.
Chair Morissette, I'm Kim Till with LFO.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Did you have...
No, well...
I have a question.
Okay. Yes. Senator Mona Sanderson has the question.
On the fiscal, in 2009-11, under revenue, it says that it's over $1 million. Then we get no revenue in 2011-13, and I'm not sure if this would be sustainable if all of a sudden the revenues are going to stop coming in.
Okay. Chair Morissette and Senator Anderson, what the fiscal shows is that we'll do a one-time transfer of the ending balance of this account at the 2009-11 biennium, and then that the revenue transfer would be completed.
And that's
that
the revenue.
Time. And the reason that's the revenue. And the reason I showed numbers in the 11-13 column was just to show you that this is a continuous event, that not that we keep transferring this this money, but that the OSAC would not get the personal services and the service and supplies amount in the budget, and that the special payments will be continuing to go to the Office of Rural Health.
Well, if you say it, so that's good.
No, it makes sense in the revenue section. It shows the transfer of funds, and mm-hmm. and once the funds have been transferred, they don't have to be transferred again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Transferred out.
Yeah.
And this is Doug Barber again with Family Physicians. It leaves open the opportunity for Ways and Means to appropriate money.
Yeah.
Or, 2011-13 biennium, and that would be added to that $1 million that's transferred.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Kim. Thanks, Doug. Other questions?
Okay. Well, just one other question. Thank you. So I know it's a transfer. Will this budget be coming before Ways and Means, and will there be money appropriated to it? I mean, it just seems strange.
Chair Morissette, Senator Lance Anderson, yes, it would. The funding for OHSU goes through the Department of Administrative Services.
But this wouldn't need to go to Ways and Means because it's just a transfer of funds, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Good. Other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you again. Okay.
Do you have any other comments?
I'm sorry, Chair Morissette and Senator Morris Anderson. Yes, it does need to come down to Ways and Means so that we can do this transfer, so that we can do the logistics of transferring from one agency to
so
the other.
So the bill will go to Ways and Means?
Yes.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. But it should come out of Ways.
Yes, it should. Okay. It's just for the logistics.
Unless. Okay.
Well, the House missed it, obviously.
They didn't know what they
did. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay, we are in work session. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2581 to the floor to do pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2581A to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Further discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Mona Sanderson?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator Telson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Morrison?
Aye. Okay. House Bill 2581 is on its way. Okay, we have a... Okay, we're going to open a public hearing on HCR 8. Did you wish to testify? Okay. Marianne Amanda.
How tragic.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HCR 8 is an in memoriam to Lynn Maureen England from...
Okay, would you introduce yourself, please?
Thank you. Chair Morissette, members of the committee. My name is Marianne Almeida. I am a legislative assistant to Representative Tina Kotek. She unfortunately had meetings that she couldn't get out of this morning, so she asked that I come to you today to present her resolution honoring Lynn Maureen England of Powell View, Oregon. Lynn was killed in a car accident last November at the age of 59 on her way traveling from Central Oregon to a meeting of the Oregon Commission for Child Care here in Salem. And in this tragic accident, the Commission for Child Care lost its vice chair and a dedicated member for 5 years, which is why we feel it's so important to have this resolution honoring her life's achievements. On the Oregon Commission for Child Care, she was a passionate advocate for providing care through employers. This is something that she had chosen to do with her own organization, her CPA agency in Prineville, and she wanted to bring this to the rest of the state. So she was a major advocate for legislation to enable employers to provide child care for their employees, which was something she was so passionate and dedicated to that she walked the walk as well. She also held the face of child care in Oregon during her work on the commission. She was very dedicated to other community agencies. The Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants, the Kirk County Natural Resources Planning Committee, and the Sir Optimus International. So she was a very involved and dedicated member of her community. She had a deep appreciation for all things wild and the natural beauty of Oregon, and spent a lot of time hiking and out in the forest with her children, grandchildren, and her beloved dogs. On a personal note, when we had this resolution on the House floor, I had the opportunity to meet just a handful of her family members, and they were all such beautiful people that it's very clear that her legacy is living on through the lives and the work of her extended family. So it's really a great thing that she was able to touch so many people's lives professionally, but also such a beautiful mother, grandmother, and dedicated family member. So I ask that you fully support this resolution today to continue to honor her life and her dedication, and also that we all model ourselves on that type of energy and compassion for the work that we do. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Others wishing to testify? Okay. Seeing no others, I will close the public hearing and open a work session. Yes. Senator
Virgil. Mr. Chair, as a member, co-chair of the subcommittee, which includes the Oregon Youth Authority, I'm not really sure of exactly what this bill does.
No.
We must be on a different bill.
We're on HCR 8.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I was going to say.
Well, I was just going to have you carry HCR 8.
Very confused.
Okay. We're going to open a work session on, or we did open a work session on HCR 8.
Mr. Chair, I move HCR 8 to the Senate floor with a due adopt motion.
Senator Cruz moves HCR 8 to the floor of the Senate with a due adopt recommendation. Any further discussion? Yes.
Lynn was a friend of mine and was in my office the week before she was killed, and I think it's an admirable thing that we're doing here today to memorialize.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's wonderful. I'm glad that you have that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did we call the roll?
We have the roll.
Yeah, call the roll, please.
Senator Monica Sanderson.
Aye.
Senator Berger.
Aye.
Senator Telford.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair Monica.
Aye. HCR 8 passes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Telfer will carry the resolution. Good. Okay, we will open a work session on public hearing, possible work session on House Bill 2144. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2144 instructs Department of Education, Oregon Youth Authority, Department of Human Services, and State Commission on Children and Families to take part in developing an integrated system of care to facilitate a planning process for youth at risk of developing emotional, behavioral, or substance abuse-related needs, utilizing their families and community and natural supports to provide a flexible group of services in a customized plan that reflects the youth and families' needs, values, and preferences. It directs that plan goals and strategies be tied to observable or measurable indicators of success, and it directs that agencies implement the wraparound initiative to the extent practical, allows agencies to combine funding sources and seek federal approval or waiver, establishes advisory committee to report progress to the legislature, defines in detail family, family-run organization, identified population, partner agency, services and supports, system of care, and wraparound as pertain to the goals of HB 2144A, establishes core values and principles of the wraparound initiative, and identifies implementation factors to be in place by 2015, permits agencies to adopt rules in collaboration for implementation of the wraparound services.
Okay, thank you. Bill Boca and Walt Bigley, would you come up, please?
Chair Morissette and members of the committee, my name is Bill Bushka. I'm the manager of Children's Mental Health Services for the Addictions and Mental Health Division within the Department of Human Services. Chair Morissette, I'm wondering if it would be okay if Eric Richards from the Department of Education join me as we introduce this to you.
Good morning, Chair Morissette.
Good morning.
Committee members, my name is Eric Richards, and I am the Director of Operations with the Oregon Department of Education's Office of Student Learning and Partnerships. I'm here on behalf of Superintendent Castillo today as one of the lead agencies in this proposed legislation to express our very strong support and our enthusiasm about this legislation. I think, as you know, there have been efforts in the past to try to get something of this nature off the ground, and they have not completely succeeded. And we're very excited to be a part of the leadership team on this and to be a part of this proposed initiative, and need the legislation to really keep it moving forward and to give a vision for where it's going to go in the future. In particular, at the Department of Education, we're excited about two or three things. The first thing is we've looked at different states as a collaborative group and how they're implementing wraparound. For example, New Jersey, Maryland, Oklahoma. And what we see is that the Department of Education in those states has not been anywhere near as active a player as our Department of Education is right now and proposes to be in the future. And we're not only excited to be actively involved, but we really believe that the involvement of education in this initiative is critical to its success. And so we're thrilled to be a part of that. And we also know that although we're in times of financial hardship, we agree that there are ways to move this initiative forward right now by looking at ways to more efficiently use our resources, to communicate better together as agencies, and to meet regularly and plan and do good things with what we already have. And hopefully when times are better fiscally, that we'll be able to really move it forward at an even faster pace. So again, just would like to, on behalf of the superintendent, express our commitment as a department and our enthusiasm about this legislation and our support for it. Thank you.
Okay. Questions? I do see that there is a minimal fiscal impact. Can you address that?
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, again, I'm Bill Bushka with the Addictions and Mental Health Division, Department of Human Services. That is one question that we've been asked, and we were asked on the House side about why there is no fiscal, or if you're seeing a minimum fiscal. We have been involved in this initiative as state agencies and community partners through a governor's executive order since 2007, and many of us are spending our time and staff time, and we have been for the last couple of years, on the initiative and working on a strategic plan and implementation strategy. We would continue to do that, and we would continue to partner together and work together. So this initiative really isn't about creating new things, but it's really about using existing resources the most efficiently and effectively as possible. And so the reason there's no fiscal is it's work we're already doing and we plan on continuing to do.
Okay, good. Thank you. Yes, Senator Telford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who to direct this question to, but in Section 2, in regards to the early intervention, as a state-level, explain to me what you mean by early intervention.
Chair Morissette, Senator Telfer, we really wanted to make sure that the initiative didn't just focus on the kids with the most complicated needs. And often a lot of the system of care initiatives around the country and in Oregon have really focused on that part of it. The idea about early intervention and prevention is that there is a lot that can be done, and there's a lot of efforts that go into place with early intervention, and not just with young children, but it's really effective with young children also, but in intervening early even with adolescents. And the idea of really coordinating our early intervention efforts was really important. So we wanted to make sure the initiative did focus on 0 through 18-year-olds, and the governor's executive order outlined that for us. Family members were really strong in having that being that particular language in the bill.
Senator Bridger.
Because all of the groups that would be working with you have their own programs and their own effort in dealing with children, why would I not think this is another level of bureaucracy?
Senator Morissette, Senator Berger, our system has been developed as a siloed system, is a term that you hear often with government, and that we often work independent of each other and try to do our own system improvements and work. This is really an effort to bring those system improvements and those works together, those programs together. What we find, just with the children's mental health system, well over 33% of the families who receive services through the public mental health system also receive and need services from at least three other agencies. So if you have a child with significant mental health needs, you're trying to navigate four systems at a minimum to get what you need and what will benefit. And we as state agencies and people who are delivering the services in at the community also are trying to navigate those independent silos, those independent regulations and funding streams to try to do the best thing for the children and families. But often those things get in the way, or that they can be duplicative or competing. So this really is about bringing our initiatives together, bringing our best practices together, so kids and families really get the services that they need and they can benefit from. So it's really about bringing all those best practices and initiatives together and those cultures of change together.
Follow up, Mr.
Yes.
Chair. Well, in theory, it sounds really good. And it sounds like the perfect way to handle the situation. But if you look at these individual units, the Commission on Children and Families, Education, OYA, each one of them are stretched financially in trying to get programs done. And so I would question the timing of trying to do something like this at a time when everyone is asking for either more money or having to cut back on the funds that they have. Response?
Yes. Senator Morissette, we feel this is, while a lot more could be done if there was additional funds, we realize this is a time this isn't the time of more funds. But for us, it's more important, and even more important, to continue this initiative and really continue to look at ways that we can partner together. We have a very under-resourced system, and that's not going to change in the immediate future. But the model that we are following and that we're using really has been developed for nearly two decades now of a lot of national research, many states and communities, and we've had four pilot projects that have happened in Oregon, in Multnomah County, Clackamas County, Lane County, and Mid-Columbia counties, really that have worked together to integrate the services and really use the money and resources that they have more effectively, and really to help families and kids develop those natural supports, and when they do need agency funding to help them through the times that they're experiencing, that is most efficient and effective. So for us, this is an optimum time to do that and to really work together and use our resources most effectively.
Follow-up, Mr.
Yes.
Chair. So you've had four pilot projects that have involved these agencies, and they've worked successfully.
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger, those four projects were a nationally funded system of care sites that have had different agencies in different parts of the system that have been working together. And there's two current sites that are going on and three graduated sites. One of the difficulty is the sustainability, as you know, of grant programs. And what we want to do through this initiative is institutionalize that work so that it becomes the way systems are organized and systems are done. So if a grant project or if a pilot project goes away, it really does have continuation and sustainability. So we have learned a lot of lessons from those projects, and we have a lot of people who have experienced those projects as part of our steering committee and part of our work.
Okay.
Do you want to?
Yes.
Lots of questions.
Well, and I'm an advocate of local control over people in those communities, and my concern is that a lot of youth, because I've had some comments from constituents regarding the state control over particularly early intervention of perhaps children who are not even in the system yet. We have a lot of programs in the Central Oregon area, Big Brothers Big Sisters for one, just had a big bowl for kids last weekend, and there's a lot of good work being done at the community level that know the kids, know how to deal with them versus having something coming down from the top. So I have concerns about taking away some of the local activity that goes on in dealing with local youth in those local communities.
Chair Morissette, Senator Telfer, that's exactly what we're really trying to do, and what this initiative is about in developing local systems of care. One of the fundamental values, system of care values, is local control, local accountability, and decision making. Often, what I hear as the state mental health manager is communities really wanting to do what you're talking about, but they're finding there are state funding silos and state regulations that really keep them from truly realizing a local system and what a local system can do. What we're really trying to do through this initiative is become better organized and integrated at the state level so that communities can organize themselves in a way and develop themselves in a way that they can better meet the needs of kids in the community. So in a lot of ways, this is about the state trying to get out of the way, so to speak, of local development and local organization and really get those things together at the state level so communities can do that. We do have some people in behind me who are experienced at the community level in doing this work, and so I think they could give you some...
I think this is exactly the right thing to do. You know, the cliche, don't waste a good crisis. We're in a crisis right now, and this is the time to come together at the local level to solve the problems. And we've done this in healthcare. We have some consortiums in Bend and in Blaine County that the providers are coming together and sharing resources, sharing information, and together they're developing a much more efficient system than the silo system. So to me, this is the way to go, is a wraparound. You bring the resources that already exist in the community, the local community, put them together, and
increase the efficiency of the program. And when times are tough, that's what you have to do. You don't get new money. You simply use the money that you have in a better way, I think. And you involve it. All delivery systems are local. And so that, you know, the state facilitates delivery, but it's at the local level that it takes place. And so I think this is great. I'm sorry, Senator Monson.
Okay. Number one, I've been involved with this wraparound initiative in various ways. But one question, I was on the governor's task force on underage drinking, and I know that you listed the governor's council on alcohol and drug use as a supporter, but why don't we have the Department of Justice also? Because they also have their underage drinking and children, and in a sense, they were off developing legislation, et cetera, for underage drinking, and we were in our own governor's task force. So that's just a comment. Not sure you thought about that, but I'd like you to think about other agencies too. But the other thing is, I know this is something that the governor really wants. I know it's what the department really wants. Yet you come up with a fiscal that's minimal when I take a look at all that you need to do and collect and evaluate data, where you'll have to create one or more committees to review that's in section 3 at the bottom of the page, and establishing a workforce development process. And I just go through all of these. It is going to take time, so you're going to have to pick and choose what programs you're going to work on. So why wasn't this down in Ways and Means? Because I truly believe that there is a fiscal to this.
Chair Morissette, Senator Moniz Anderson, as we worked on through the governor's executive order and through the steering committee, we did have hopes that we would be able to get some investment into this process, but the realization a few months ago that wasn't going to happen, we really did set out a game plan of multi-phases of how we would implement this structure. We do have a reporting requirements in the bill that we will come back and report about our success towards implementation of those things that you mentioned, but also what the fiscal impact will be to fully implement and to fully implement those things that you pointed out. We have done a number of things, and we've, in the last couple of years, have had a number of different steering committees. We would not be creating more or new. We would be continuing a couple of the work groups that we have going on. So we wouldn't be adding new ones in. That's already staff work and work of families and community partners that is already going on. To fully realize what is in front of you in that bill, in the future, will probably take more money if we want to fully realize it. But we do have an implementation strategy that goes out multiple years and multiple biennium, and be able to come back to you and report on a regular basis of what that would be.
Just follow up.
Yeah.
But the Ways and Means gets all these different bills with, you know, and we could definitely be passing this with a due pass in the Ways and Means process, and still pass it through the Ways and Means process without funding. I mean, I'm just surprised it's gone this route, because I definitely want to see the wraparound get better than it is. There's no question. I just find it a little disconcerting that something that I feel should be going to Ways and Means is not.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 1, Sub 2, partner agencies include Department of Education, Oregon Youth Authority, Department of Human Services, State Commission on Children and Families. Is there laws on the books now that prohibit these entities from working together?
Chair Morissette, Senator Cruz. There's not laws that prohibit us from working together, but there is a regulatory framework that keeps us from fully working together. And there are funding streams that we have, and there are ways that children and families qualify for the services that communities really feel that the way our regulatory structure and our funding silos work keeps them from really working together in a full way and really having a integrated funding pool and an integrated accountability structure at the community level so they can work together. But Senator Cruz, there is nothing in law that says we can't work together.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and clearly the silos that have been created, some of them by the feds, obviously, and some by us, clearly make no sense. I just find it extraordinary that we have to consider a bill to get agencies that should be working together and doing the streamlining already without having a bill to say that they have to do it. You know, I'm not necessarily, Mr. Chair, disagreeing with the objectives here, but I think at this point in time, to move forward in the direction they've been moving probably makes sense to be creating. Actually, this does create more government in a way at this point in time. I find troubling.
Okay. Boy. I'm just going to take a minute to say I think that this bill gives some direction, some needed direction to the various stakeholders to work together, and it talks about how they work together. And it facilitates. And our role is to kind of oversee this. I'm not convinced that there is a significant fiscal. There will be money spent by the various groups that are now working, and they will provide the resources, and they will come back next session and make a report. Obviously, we're not going to move this bill today. We're going to hear more testimony, and perhaps some of you might want to visit with some of the representatives. Yes, Senator Bridger.
Do you anticipate no new personnel or staff involved in this? You think the staff that the people have, I've just been going through OYA's budget where we have people that are just scared to death about losing their job and having to shift all this, and we have, and the school district, and in my district we have school people that are just doing drastic things. So do you not anticipate staff or new people coming on to help you with the wraparound?
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger, we have a you will be making some very tough decisions in the coming weeks about the budgets. We are investing time and staff resources right now, and we have been for the last couple of years, of trying to do the right thing. Depending on what all of our budgets look like, when you're done with your tough job, we'll have to make decisions about how we're able to direct staff resources. So,
yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Senator Telfer, and then
Chair Morissette, Senator Verger. I can speak only for the Department of Education, but we're very clear on our staffing arrangements and the commitment to this initiative, and it will remain the same. There will not be any additional staff at the state level who will be added to work on it during the biennium. And we've worked pretty closely with school districts to make sure there's representation on work groups, the education work group, for example. They have people who represent all of them and are doing a very good job. So I don't anticipate in education that there will be any additional staffing beyond what is there already.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent the people of Deschutes County, and unfortunately they're not here today. And I've had some input from some of them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask a question based on a comment from an individual. One of the individuals, it has had 42 years involved with youth in this kind of area, continues to work at board levels, statewide levels. So let me just quote to you a concern and then have you respond to me as to alleviate my concerns. Communities should not be presented with statewide plans for their vetting and implementation. Rather, they should design approaches, strategies that work best for them and involve neighborhoods, community groups, and regular citizens in ways that empower them rather than simply use them. Local action will not otherwise be inspired. Can you comment on that concern?
Go ahead.
Chair Morissette, Senator Telfer, I can, again, only speak from the education perspective, but, for example, we have funds that you appropriate, grant and aid dollars, for long-term care and treatment programs for some of the kids that would be involved in this initiative. And since they are state-appropriated and since we have oversight by statute to oversee long-term care and treatment programs, I think it's inevitable that we have to be involved and have some oversight in the process. But we're very much in favor of, as Bill indicated, working with the local communities and giving them as much autonomy within statute and within our oversight role as we can.
We'll follow up.
Yes.
And I appreciate that response. But you did not deal with the early intervention, which I think is really where the major concern is.
Chair Morissette, Senator Telfer, we really are looking for ways to streamline and provide the ability for communities to organize themselves and to develop local systems of care to best meet the kids. We don't see this as that we're the bill outlines a set of values and principles to organize a system of care upon that have been developed and been part of literature for well over 20 years. And a lot of this language is not new or different. There have been people from early intervention from 0-3, 0-6 who have been involved in the work groups and processes. And we don't see this, and I think the community partners who have really been involved for many years with this do not necessarily see this as a way of the state dictating, but more of a way of the state providing a baseline of how to of organizing a system of care and values and principles, but then the operational details and what happens at the community level is really up to the community. Just another follow-up, the strategy that we have outlined in the bill really talks about establishing up to 3 community sites. Those would be voluntary community sites that would want to participate and that would want to work on implementation so we could learn more about what we're doing and what communities need to really work together. We aren't looking for imposing this across the state at this point.
Yes, Senator Montes Anderson.
Yeah, and I'm still harping on the ways and means issue. With the budgets that we are going to be dealing with in ways and means, we are going to be cutting staff, so you're not going to be able to have the existing staff that you think. In prioritizing this initiative with many of your others, if you were cutting staff, there would be some. If your department will be cutting staff, which I'm sure our budget's going to require you to do in some form or fashion, and you've been doing a yeoman's job in already addressing that issue already, how can you prioritize that you would have staff to be able to establish an advisory committee and basically staff the Children's Wraparound Initiative Advisory Committee?
Senator, or Chair Morissette, Senator Montes Anderson, we also will, as you point out, have to make tough decisions and look at the staff resources that we have. We really are looking at the State Advisory Committee as something that's already going on, and it's a meeting that already happens and continues to happen. There are, potentials for us to use other committees to provide in that function, but we will make priorities, and we'll make priorities for the provision of mental health services, at least for the Addictions Mental Health Division, and be able to do what we can, depending on what happens with our budget. And we will be able to come back to you and say, based on this limited resource and our limited ability to do it because of budget cuts, this is as far as we've gotten. So if we can't get very far, we can't get very far. But we will continue to do what we can to keep moving this forward.
What I'd like to do is hear the rest of the testimony. We've got several other people to testify. Yes.
I just want to make a comment that if you look at the governor's budget, A&D has been cut drastically. Gambling addiction has been devastated. As an initiative or a wraparound coming from the governor, his budget does not reflect the interest in the wraparound if you look at where the monies have been taken away. So I just want to make that comment.
And we will hear from the governor's office as well. Would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Walt Beglaw, and I'm the Marion County District Attorney. I'm also on the governor's wraparound advisory, although I'm a bit of a newcomer to that. But I am here this morning to express my support for House Bill 2144. I might be the least likely candidate to weigh in at this particular time, given that in terms of children's mental health approaches, I don't have any expertise in this field. But I do know a lot about kids and the devastating impacts in their mental health and in the arena of programs that we have and offer and the challenges they face. We see them every day. Let me say this. I believe that the future of our community health will hinge on investments in effective children's mental health programs. And I believe the wraparound vision is a key ingredient. And I've been listening very carefully in law enforcement. I don't know if this is a good comparison, particularly in tough times, in terms of I considered a force multiplier. I bring these different entities in law enforcement together to tackle a particular problem, and we enhance and elevate our capacity at a local level to take on that particular challenge. And so that's the force multiplier that I see wraparound delivering. I have to tell you, in the very first few meetings, along with Dick Withnell, a local businessman who was on the wraparound with me, the group came to us and said, what can we do for you locally? We want to energize the local approach to children's mental health using the wraparound model. And I was duly impressed by that, given that it was coming from the state and these entities that had been working uniquely and individually year after year. Let me, I've spent some time looking at wraparound personally. With it's got a focus on family, and I like the idea of pushing our collective chips into the center of the table. I have actually been in family meetings recently. I have gone to team staffings, and it's all geared towards that energy, and it's geared towards self-sufficiency in the end. So I am pretty darn convinced that the wraparound model is an effective direction our state ought to be taking. It's very compassionate when you look at the players at the table from your community who are actually handling these families right then and there in the crisis they face, not only at the top of the pyramid, but down lower with the other kids that are entering greater impacts in their mental health arena, particularly at early intervention, the 0-3 issues that we're facing as well. So I just see this as the policy engine to move in that direction and maximizing the dollars that aren't circulating in one pool. I think this is the right direction to go. So for what that is worth, on behalf of my office and the DA's office, and seeing kids day in and day out, I think this is a good model. So thanks for your time this morning.
To your knowledge, are other district attorneys around the state participating in this as you are?
No, I was asked to join the advisory committee here locally, but I will be briefing the Oregon District Attorneys Association around this, and I think it's fair to say the DAs think it's very important that we're investing in local mental health programs for kids. Again, you know, with my experience in Liberty House or Child Abuse Assessment Center, focusing all the players into one area around children mental health is a prevention model, and it is the future of our community health relative to public safety. Yeah. Because the kids that aren't, these families that aren't getting, we aren't wrestling into one area and getting those issues addressed, will ultimately end up in DA's offices like other issues that we see, and that's a waste of money. So I think you would find support around DA's using those local resources in a model that literally builds around it. The drug courts have the same wraparound concept, the same issue. Let's get all the players that are invested in the family here in one place so we can deliver services effectively and change behaviors or address them cognitively. And so I think you would find support in that arena as we get going here.
Okay. I totally agree. And to me, this is an opportunity to give direction at the state level to facilitate developing local efficiencies and models and so on. I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. And again, I think in a time of crisis, this is when we have to do extraordinary things like this. But I think your work is cut out for you because you have a couple of people up here who will continue to have questions. Perhaps we're not going to obviously even try to move this bill right now, but I'm hoping that, and I know there are other people who want to testify who are not here today. But we do have a few more, I think, who will testify. So are there additional questions right now, or should we move on with this?
Chair, I'd like to respond to the district attorney, because I know you're aware of the programs that we do support and struggle to get funded, such as drug courts that are very effective, and addiction, and particularly with alcohol and drug, it is successful if we can get the money to fund those programs. So, and I just want to comment that I know there are wonderful people in Marion County, but probably none any better than Dick Whitnell, who has certainly contributed a tremendous amount of energy, time, and financial assistance to this community. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you very much. Albertina Kerr, Chris, would you come up, please? Would the governor's office like to come up? Anyone from the governor? Okay. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, my name is Chris Crank. I'm the president and CEO of Albertina Kerr Centers in Portland. And I'm sorry there isn't a bigger crowd here today, because when this bill was heard in the House Committee on Human Services, the place was packed. So I'm a little discouraged by that.
We're going to have another hearing.
And I guess I am here. I've been at Albertina Kerr for 19 years, and for all those years, I have been working hard on this approach. In 1990 in Multnomah County, there was a wraparound program which was funded by the federal government, which unfortunately was killed by budget cuts in 1995. We've tried at the local level, and that's, I guess, what I'd like to speak to, because I think many of the comments have been at the local level, and we are a local provider who've been in business for 102 years, so we're very committed to the care of children. And I guess I would, you know, one of the things that is really apparent why we got involved in wraparound is we did some analysis of the children who were the most costly to the system, mm-hmm. and looked at the outcomes. And in many cases, you've invested over $1 million, perhaps more than that, and ended up with a child who ended up in the correction system, you know, at age 18. So one of the strongest advocates with our project in Multnomah County, which we funded through private sources, not through the federal government, through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, through Northwest Health Foundation, Meyer Memorial Trust, is Judge Nan Waller. And she is a very staunch advocate, and I'm sorry she isn't here today, because she would speak eloquently and was a driving force behind the project we have, which started in 2004. Well, I'm excited to talk about this this approach because it's not new technology. Oregon's about 20 years behind the curve, unfortunately, and there are many, as the representative from the Department of Education spoke of, there are many, many of these projects going around the United States and showing excellent, excellent results. The project I'm most familiar with is Wraparound Milwaukee in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and actually that was the stimulus for the project we started in sponsored in 2004. And they have been in business, I think, about 14 years or so, have tremendous data. And what they show is that kids are, through a variety of indicators of school attendance, not getting involved with criminal activities, getting along with their families, basic indicators that we would all take for, you know, being successful in our, as a citizen, they show great success on. They also show cost reduction, significant cost reduction, because they haven't put kids in residential treatment centers, psychiatric hospitals, things that cost, you know, are very high cost services. So I guess I want to make that point. We work in, I want to speak a little to the local level because we work in Multnomah County. Albertina Kerr Centers is a sponsor, fiscal agent of the project, but the project is a community-owned project. It is chaired by Judge Nan Waller. It has representatives from all of the public agencies, the Department of Child Welfare, Mental Health, Juvenile Corrections. And in fact, in our project, the people who are doing the work on the ground are representatives of those public agencies. So they're people who work for the juvenile court or who work for child welfare, and they're all trained in the technology of Wraparound, which, as I say, is about 25 years old. And for that reason, we have very, very strong buy-in in the community and very, very strong support for the project. I think it was talked about before about why couldn't, unfortunately Senator Cruz is not here, but why couldn't we just do this without legislation? Well, if we could have done it without legislation, we would have done it 20 years ago. I think that, unfortunately, the federal funding streams that come in make it very difficult at the state level and therefore impossible at the local level to blend that money and make it work together without a tremendous sense of goodwill. We developed goodwill through this private foundation funded project with the hope that that you folks eventually would bring this together at the state level so we can operate it at the local level. We can't access Medicaid money on our own. We can't, you know, I think it requires the state cooperation to make this thing work.
I think you need to address that point in writing, please. I mean, what you're talking about right now and the fact that what legislation will do, you know, and that's a good response to what Senator Cruz raised. And my feeling is that the state is the facilitator. The state has the big picture plan and engages the local community and brings in the nonprofits, all of those volunteers, and keeps the cost effectiveness in a time of crisis is how do you keep people out of other facilities? You know, where if we're cutting mental health programs, where are these people going to end up without a wraparound? They're going to end up in the street, under the bridge. They're going to end up dead. They're going to end up in emergency room, in jails, and so on, at a huge cost.
True.
And the community has to come together. And the state can't just pretend like they're going to do it on their own uniformly. There has to be some guidance, I think.
Well, I'll try to follow up on that, Senator Morissette. But I think the reason I'm excited about it is because the local level really has the charge. In Multnomah County, we've identified 200 kids who are, you know, the most challenging kids to work with and are the most costly kids and have had historically poor outcomes. So that's the group we've targeted. I think that our experience is, because we operate wraparound services in our agency and we have historically operated residential treatment programs, is that we can serve more kids with better outcomes at a lower cost. So that's the excitement to me of the technology itself. But I'll try to respond to that. Maybe in my testimony, written testimony, there is something to that effect, but I'll look at that. The other thing is that why we're excited about this is it puts families in charge. We are very, our organization is dedicated to having family units remain intact wherever possible, and if they've been fragmented, to get them back together. And this technology does that. It puts the family in charge. It respects the family for their strengths. They obviously have many problems, or the kids wouldn't have some issues that that require public assistance. But we're excited about that. The other thing that really we found in our work is that these are kids who are involved in multiple systems. So they may have committed a crime. They have a mental health challenge. They've got special education needs. They may have been abused. So they've been in all these systems, and what happens is they end up with a caseworker or a care coordinator in all these systems. So if you can imagine trying to respond to four different expectations and the duplication and the waste and the obvious problems with outcomes under that situation, it's really not hard to imagine. These are families that are already under stress and confused. And so, again, the beauty of the wraparound approach is that you have one person who is coordinating care and working with all the organizations to ensure that you have one case plan, one expectation of the goals you're trying to meet, and a way to track that and look at success. So, again, I see it as a tremendous opportunity to reduce waste in the system and improve outcomes.
Well, I think those are the main points we're making, so. I'm sorry. Monday we heard testimony on the food stamp program and the efforts of DHS to coordinate services. How do you eliminate these silos? How do you get people to work together? How do you have a single point of entry? I'm working with a group in Lane County. I'm on their board, and we have to raise money to do it. It's senior outreach, and it's a single point of entry for all seniors, whether they're private pay or they need help, and that is essential. When we're cutting services, that is the one essential program that will save lives as we cut. And I know we're cutting mental health. And what's going to happen to those people? Now, Senator Cruz is back, and so I want you to tell him.
Well, I think the point that came up, Senator Cruz, while you were gone, was that why can't the state agencies just do this on their own?
Mm-hmm.
And having worked in the field and being born and raised in Eugene, actually, and worked in this for about 38 years, if they could do that, they would have done it long ago. That's the only best response I can have, because I think Mr. Bushka spoke to the fact that each of these organizations get money from different funding streams, they have different expectations tied to them, and I've brought this up to the state folks. I don't want to alienate them. Are they still in the room? I don't want to alienate anyway, but I've often said, why can't you just work more closely together?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they really want to work more closely together, but I think they need the extra impetus from the governor and from you folks to make that happen. And so that's the best response I can give you.
Mr. Chair, we could do that really quickly. Work together.
Oh, yeah, right.
Senator Montes Anderson.
First of all, I really like what Albertine Kerr has. I've visited your facilities a
appreciate
couple of
that.
Times. And that's on the one that's out on the edge of my district. I would like to know, you said that you had in 2004 received a grant from Northwest Health Foundation to develop an Oregon wraparound service initiative, and then once you got the Northwest Health Foundation support, you were then able to secure major funding from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Meyer Memorial Trust to implement the wraparound. Can you tell me how much those grants were? A ballpark?
Ballpark, $1.5 million to $2 million.
Yeah, there you go.
Excuse me, Chair Morissette, Senator Morales Anderson. About $2 million in that mm-hmm. ballpark. I don't have the figures in front of me.
And that was just for Albertina Kerr and how
this
did
was, this, the grants were for training. Heavy training, heavy evaluation from Portland State University, information technology development to develop a way to manage a case record that involves many different organizations and input from that. So it was infrastructure that was funded. The funds for the services came from things you've already allocated through the child welfare organization, the juvenile justice, and so forth. So those were the money that we got for the project was to develop the infrastructure that's necessary to operate the service.
Follow up.
Yes.
So Is the grants running out? When do they run out?
Chair Morissette, Senator Mona Sanderson, our grant for Wraparound Oregon School Age Project will end in June of 2010. There is another project in Multnomah County, which is a early childhood project, which is funded by the federal government, the SAMHSA, which there's a representative of that project in this room. I believe that ends in 2012 or thereabouts. So that money will run out, and things will end unless we get some state support for that to occur. And I really, you mentioned fiscal impact. From what I can see, and obviously the state can comment on that more, what they are providing at this point is very helpful. We in Multnomah County would be delighted to be one of those three demonstration sites over the next couple of years, should they choose that.
A follow-up?
Yes.
Yeah, just because you have already done such great work in a wraparound, which I truly believe in that model, I feel we need to do that statewide. I just know that it's going to take money. Thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Do you know what?
Senator Mona Sanderson, may I respond to that? I think you're already spending the money right now. So the question is how you use that money and how you organize that money. I do agree that if you're going to spread this technology to children with lesser needs, there will be more money needed in the future.
Thank you.
Jane Allen, would you come up, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. We'll continue the discussion.
Particularly because I appreciated your comments and want to clarify that my concern with the bill is early intervention. These are kids that are not already in the system and don't have a caseworker, et cetera. So how would your program... Of course, you are a local program, but you didn't describe anything about early prevention. So how does this play into this bill, early intervention?
Chair Morissette, Senator Telford, I think that early intervention will be a later phase of this project. We, as an organization today, run an early intervention project for 2 to 5 year old children with the money you've allocated from the legislature. So I think that at least my impression is what will happen is that as this project rolls out over time, the focus inevitably will be on the most difficult and challenging kids, and then we'll move into the early intervention over time. That would be, but I would defer to the state representatives for their vision of that, but that's mine. Because we don't have the resources. It's really a catch-22, of course, because if you put money into prevention, you save money later.
That's right.
But you also have these kids right now who are all on top of you who have multiple and significant.
Do you work with birth to three, the relief nurseries? And so?
Chair Morissette, we sometimes get referrals from that. Our program has worked in partnership with the Multnomah County Education Service District, so they refer those kids in who are more challenging than they can put in their mainstream programs.
Okay. Yeah.
Follow up.
Sure.
Then the early intervention piece of this, which is currently being done by the communities in identifying their local individuals, how do you see that early intervention piece of the wraparound? How do you see that happening differently than it is currently happening?
Chair Morissette, Senator Telfer, I'm having trouble answering that question, frankly, because I think what happens today is the, at least for many children who need public assistance, they're identified early on by the child welfare organization. Perhaps there's a child abuse referral by juvenile justice. Perhaps there's a shoplifting incident. So I think that to me, the wraparound approach is not, I don't believe, required for every child and family who has a mental health challenge. I think it is required for those who have moderate to severe mental health challenges, and that the current system can handle many of those kids, and does today, who have lesser problems.
Okay. Senator Bridger.
Yes, thank you for being here today. I need to make it very clear that I've been involved with children and trying to get children healthier and families healthier for a long, long time.
Good for you.
And so my heart's in the right place. I think the model is very idealistic and wonderful goal. My sense of so many people doing the same thing is concerning to me. For instance, in your county, I've just been looking at services in various counties, and I've looked at Multnomah, and many people are working on low-income, disturbed families, dysfunctional families, mentally ill children. And so does it concern you about the duplication of services that are going on at the present time in Oregon in all of our counties?
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger, that's exactly my motivation for being supportive of this approach. There is tremendous duplication going on in our communities all over Oregon. I go back to my example of a family who's involved with multiple systems, has multiple caseworkers. You're paying for all those caseworkers right now. Mm-hmm. You're paying for all those plans to be developed. You're paying for the confusion that presents to families who are having major problems. You're paying for foster care placements that fail and then need to be redone over and over again.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. How do you think that in the wraparound you will get people to just simply give up what they're doing or the funding for that? Because, in other words, you're going to have funding at the local level. So these are many turf battles, which is probably the reason that you're not just doing it without a bill.
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger, you're very bright. That's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
What we faced in Multnomah County is, and what I'm very proud of in Multnomah County is the juvenile justice system taking the lead in Judge Nan Waller and pulling together the group, because I believe that everybody in those systems really wants to do the right thing.
Okay.
Everybody wants to do the right thing.
That's right.
Unfortunately, the way the structure is set up, the way the funding comes down, the rules and regulations often work against people working together, and that's unfortunate. This bill, I think, would move the state towards requiring people to work together.
Okay. Thank you. Don't go too far. Jane Ellen.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, Jane Ellen Whitehouse with Addictions and Mental Health Division, and I thought I'd answer two specific questions. One is Senator Mona Sanderson's question regarding the fiscal impact. I think it's important to remember that the Children's Wraparound Initiative in Oregon was created by an executive order, and all of the agencies listed in the bill were required to participate in the bill and develop the infrastructure and the funding to do that. And so within existing resources, they've created this initiative with DHS in the lead, with all of the other partners working very closely with us. The piece that's the reason there's zero fiscal is because we're already doing the work, but the executive order has expired, and what we're asking you is the statutory intent to move forward to continue to work together so that regardless of who's in the leadership of the at the legislature, at the governor's office, or at DHS, that we will continue, or at the Department of Education and the Commission on Children's and Families, that these agencies will continue to work forward to remove barriers, to collaboratively solve problems for local communities, and that's really the intent here, is to break down those barriers. And to so that and that's why there's no fiscal, is because right now we're already doing all the work, and the intent is, even with budget cuts, that we will continue to move forward as best we can within available resources. So that's why there's a zero fiscal. To Senator Cruz's point about why don't we just go do the right thing, I think it was answered to a certain degree, but if you think about how agencies are developed and rules and regulations are developed and laws are developed, you have as an agency a particular focus and a mandate from the legislature, and you go forward and do that. And you develop these silos. It's almost like the ruts for the Oregon Trail where, you know, it just keeps going and keeps going. And the ruts get deeper and deeper. I should use Highway 205 for Senator Mona Sanderson as the example of deep ruts, right? Because you get those deep ruts in those roads to get services to local communities. And what this bill does says, repave the road, work together. And I'm not a clinician, but the way I look at this is you have a child and a family in need, and it's the goal of the Children's Wraparound Initiative to serve children regardless of who can provide the services. So you have a child and a family and a team of people who usually do their individual thing for that family, and this group does their individual thing, and this group does their individual thing. What this does is it says, come to the table, what does this family and this child need to serve them appropriately, and you bring those resources to the table that you already have in a coordinated way instead of making the families jump through 1,000 different hoops.
Kind of like the medical home, right?
Correct.
Which is a good idea, too. Go ahead.
I attend one of the wraparound committee meetings, and Nan Waller was there, by the way. It was in South Salem at that, whatever that place is, couple of times. So there's, I think, already being, you're absolutely right, good work, and it has started. But you say people are already doing work. That means that we're still paying for it. So why doesn't this go to Ways and Means?
Chair Morissette, Senator Mona Sanderson, because it's already built into the base budgets. And usually when something is in a base budget of an organization or an agency, you don't go send it to Ways and Means. Legislation usually is sent to Ways and Means, in my experience, when there's an additional fiscal request.
Okay, just follow up. So the base budget, this was a governor's order and was put into the base budget, sort of circumventing then the legislative process.
Chair Morissette, Senator Mona Sanderson, I wouldn't say that it was circumventing the legislative appropriations process. I think what the governor's office did and the agency agreed to do is focus efforts together to serve families. So as an example, Eric and Bill Bushka are already on staff within the agencies that they work with, and they have just dedicated additional time and resources to this project and have continued to do that with the intent of really serving Oregonians better.
Well, I you know, I believe in that process, and I would like to see this come out of the Ways and Means process. With but yeah, thank you.
Okay. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Can I just follow up on that one question then? So if this is a executive order, which is in essence expiring, statutorily you want the legislature to say that you should continue. Without it, though, then if the program goes away, then the finances go away. So, I there is a fiscal here, and I think we're hanging this thing on fiscal impact as an additional, but if, in fact, we don't mandate it and force it to go into the budget, so to speak, and there is money being spent on it, I guess maybe that's what we should be looking at, is what is the cost of this this program right now? Because if the program goes away, those dollars go away too.
Go to other things.
I mean, they can be, if there is any more.
Chair Morissette, Senator Telfer, I think what would happen, I don't think we will backslide and go back to exactly the way things were, but people will just redirect their energies back to or to the things that are the pressing concerns of the day. So I don't think that there's a savings not to do it, because if you look at statistically in the addictions and mental health system, we're serving about 50% of the need in those systems. Hopefully, as we develop this system, we will better serve children and serve more children. But if this doesn't pass, people will redirect their energies to the other crises and the other priorities with it that were given both by the legislature and the governor.
Okay. Would you go ahead?
Thank you, Senator Morissette. My name is Robert Abrams, and I'm the project director for Wraparound Oregon Early Childhood through the Multnomah Education Service District, and I'm project director for one of the programs that Mr. Bushka mentioned earlier, is the federal system of care sites that's in Oregon. We're currently in our fourth year, and we serve children ages 0 to 8 with a wraparound model. in a very, very collaborative environment in the same wraparound program that Mr. Crank talked about and working with Nan Waller. And it comes out of this program that we have, the funding we have came out of the same group of Wraparound Oregon in Multnomah County. This is a large federal demonstration project for systems of care. There's already been one in Lane County, Clackamas County, and there's one in Mid-Columbia counties that's ending this year. So we're the first one to be, or nationally, to be housed in education. So this is a mental health program. We're housed in education, and I come with a child welfare background. So I've seen this kind of work going on for many years in many different systems. And I'm going to share a little bit of an example about early childhood and to give an idea about how bringing people to the table solves problems for families, saves money, and shows an effective use of our state funds. A mother with a two-year-old child comes into our program, and the child had many behavioral and developmental issues that needed to be addressed. Go up to the local hospital for evaluation. The evaluation is completed. There's recommendations and a treatment plan. This child is referred to the local mental health clinic. There's another set of evaluations, another set of recommendations, and another treatment plan. The child is referred to early intervention education programs. There's another evaluation, another set of treatment plans and recommendations. All three of them gave three different diagnoses, three different treatment plans, and three different ways that the mother was to work with this child, and they were not in concert with each other. So we paid for three different assessments from three different agencies. When we finally brought everybody together, including those evaluators, and had them share what they had recommended to this family with the mother there and supports for this mother, they all did, oh my goodness, what have we done? This mother was not able to receive the services that she wanted because she didn't know which way to go. She'd actually chosen one path, and the other two agencies labeled her as resistive. So now there's this fragmentation of services, and things are not working well, and we spent a lot of money trying to get to the same place. We developed a treatment plan with this mother in a wraparound process, locally driven, family-centered, that served the family's needs, and all the other practitioners and all the other supports came in to support that plan. And we met on a regular basis. This child is now in kindergarten, has made a very successful transition into kindergarten, and is in a is on a path to success. The mother is back working because she's now able to do that, so she's now being a productive member of society, where before she was having to receive public services. This is how wraparound can work and is a good use of the public funds because it's more efficiently and effectively used, and we can actually begin to save money. And that is really helpful. I wanted to address something that Senator Telfair has asked a couple of times, and that's about early intervention. With the Medicaid dollars that come in through the federal government, they kind of dictate what kind of services children and families can receive based on the medical need that the child presents. When you bring in a pooled funding environment, when you have everybody working together, you can actually begin to offer some services that are not just Medicaid-driven. In other words, you can get to some services that get to a lower level of need, not at the lowest, but you can come down a level or two with other funds to provide supports for families. When you're working together and bring all the systems together and sit down at the table and do the planning, what I've seen over and over and over again, that the mental health people say, well, we can only do this. But if there's other people at the table that say, well, if you can go that far, we can bring in some money from our system to do that, and that's where the collective wisdom comes together on behalf of the family. So we have seen early intervention, not just for the early childhood, 0 to 3, but early intervention for children before they hit the higher levels of services. We've been able to see wraparound programs able to work with those families effectively with good outcomes. And I think that's one of the ways that this bill and this legislation would really help use our funds more effectively and get to some early intervention pieces over time.
Now, it just seems to me that if an efficient program is in place, a wraparound, the possibility of foundation money, federal money, is greater to serve a more efficient program than it would be to fragment services here, there, and everywhere. And so I think that, you know, we've already mentioned some grants from Northwest Health and others. So that's this helps get outside money, right?
Senator Morissette, yes, it does. When you have a successful program that's working at a local level, and if I might go back just a little bit, we fully support our wraparound Oregon early childhood program, fully supports this bill because we need the state structure to allow the local communities to plan for themselves more efficiently and effectively. But when you have an effective program, when you go to philanthropy and you go to business, they're much more likely to pay attention to you, and we have shown that that is working for us in Multnomah County. When we have a good program, we've been able to go out to philanthropy and to businesses and get funds in to support this, so it's not always just the public funds. It works.
It's a no-brainer. Well, no. To me, it makes perfect sense. If you're going to go solicit money from foundations and from the private sector, from philanthropists, they want to see something that works and not a fragmentation. If I put money into a single program, that will help some people in that program, but it may be at odds with other programs and so on. And to me, it is, I think this is. I'm involved in several nonprofit organizations locally at Lane County. Peace Health has a community obligation. They're a nonprofit hospital. They are heavily involved in 100% access of care in Lane County. There are other organizations, private, involved. There are 150 doctors, volunteers in medicine, and medical providers who are volunteering to do the kinds of things that you're talking about, and I think that if there is a structure in place, that helps people decide that they're going to get involved. Anyway.
Yes. Senator Morissette, if I might do one more follow-up. One of the things that we've noticed in working with the child welfare caseworkers who are really overloaded with their caseloads and have a tremendous burden, and it's a really difficult task for them. When they get involved in a wraparound team, what can happen is that they begin to see that there's some other people out in the community who can help watch over what's going on with the family to ensure the safety of the children. And it begins to make their job more doable and actually more effective because there's other people assisting and actually can go to court and testify and provide good support. And it is that teaming. And what we're discovering with a lot of child welfare folks is that they're actually able to do their jobs better, and we're getting really very, very good outcomes. For instance, time to adoption is dropping tremendously, so we're saving dollars there. Returning children home from foster care in a timely and safe manner so that there's savings there and that they can move on to their next case, and there are still people involved in the family to help out.
I think the problem is this bill is kind of overwhelming. When I was sitting down, I highlighted practically everything in it because, and then I wrote.
It's a good bill.
And so it's unusual to see a bill that is so jam-packed with things, but I think it makes perfect sense. And I knew that we were going to spend a lot of time on this because all of these seemingly contradictory things. Yes.
Chair Morissette, I think that one of the reasons why you're seeing such a comprehensive bill is that the bill was worked with the wraparound steering committee that's already in existence, and they've worked the bill. It was a collaborative approach to writing legislation and then turning it over to legislative council and working with them to understand things like systems of care and defining family in this terminology. But it was definitely everyone agreed that this was the best language and the way we needed to move forward in Oregon.
Okay. Senator Verger.
Thank you for your testimony. You obviously came with the solution for that family. I guess my question is, did you help solve the future problem? In other words, did the next family get different evaluations? Did anything happen at the problem? You brought a great solution. Tell me what happened there.
Senator Morissette, Senator Berger, thank you very much for the question. It's really important about wraparound and systems of care is workforce development and training. And that as people become more and more aware of this process, the next time they approach a family, they're going to go, oh, I've been through this before. Now I know what I need to do. I think I better be involved in seeing if there's a wraparound team or some kind of good care coordination going on. And what we're discovering is that more and more practitioners and clinicians become involved and engaged and learn about this, that it's beginning to spread. and it spreads on its own. And it happens at the local level very strongly with workers, supervisors, and managers. So we do an awful lot with our grant dollars to provide workforce development and training so that we have a well-trained workforce until all the grant funds go away, and we hope that it continues. But what we're discovering is that as people become aware, and we do an awful lot of outreach to train people on this, lots of us go out and do public speaking and go to meet with groups. So it begins to spread case by case, practitioner by practitioner.
Where was your third pilot project? You said Multnomah County, Blaine County, and?
Senator Burr, Clackamas County. And there's currently one ending in mid-Columbia counties, Dalles, Hood River, Wasco.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. Yes. Can you explain to me why no rural area of the state of Oregon was not selected for the wraparound?
Senator Morissette, Senator Berger, the current one in mid-Columbia is serving Wasco, Sherman, Hood River, Gillam, and Wheeler counties.
Okay.
And that's the
that's
system
rural.
Of care grant, and that's rural and frontier.
That is rural, yes. All right, good. One more follow-up, Mr. Chair, and that is for the DHS budget in the mental and addiction department, are you facing some pretty serious cuts based on the governor's budget?
Chair Morissette, Senator Verger, yes, both Addictions and Mental Health Division, or Addictions and Mental Health Services, are cut pretty dramatically in the governor's recommended budget. Close to, I think it's 80% to 90% in the addiction system and 50% in the adult mental health system. Because most of the children's mental health services are funded through Medicaid, a lot of those are sequestered and protected. But it's definitely also administrative cuts as well.
Yeah, so noted, Mr. Chair.
Okay. My experience has been in Lane County that the private sector has stepped up to fill the gaps for programs that they value because they understand the cost shift that they have to pay. And ultimately, the taxpayers have to pay. And there are people with resources who are willing to step in a time of emergency. Not everyone is suffering economically these days. There are those individuals and agencies or foundations that do have money looking for efficient programs. They don't want to put their dollars into something that may or may not work. But when they see the local community coming together with some state facilitation and guidance, I think that is exactly what we need in a time of crisis. Exactly. This is an opportunity to design a better system. And it's been said, don't waste a good crisis. This is a crisis that will help us streamline the system and become more efficient and save money. So,
Chair Morissette, just one final comment. I think it should be noted that wraparound is an evidence-based practice. The legislature mandated movement towards that over the last four or five years, and that this is a very well-researched model. I think Senator Verger mentioned that it might be idealistic. I think it's very practical, actually, too. It's been well-researched. It's known. It's effective. It's cost-effective. The other thing that I personally will work for, you mentioned a medical home earlier, will work for over the next 6 years, which is when this bill, you know, has sort of a life, is to also integrate primary care into what's going on with the kids, because that's really not a part of this bill. I don't want it to detract from the bill, but it needs to happen going forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Just to follow up on that, just to let you know that if we get our bills passed that we passed regarding our primary care home model, that will help this issue also.
Good. Other comments? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will bring this back again, and we have an opportunity to get information to us collectively or individually. Thank you for being here. Okay.
with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2144, and we are adjourned.